You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hi, Nikita.
Hey, Bob.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I am in Doha, Qatar. And I'm still a little jet lagged. And I'm not sure if I'm supposed to tell you exactly why I'm here. I mean, it's not a secret mission, but I came here to tape a kind of debate slash conversation on AI. And in the guidance they give you, they say we'd rather you didn't put this on social media until it actually comes out, which isn't going to be for a few months. Now, I don't really think they mean I shouldn't say more than I've already said. So maybe I'll say a little more than I've already said. But I don't want to offend the people who flew me and my daughter over here business class, you know? You want to stay on good terms with people who do things like that.
Is this your first time there?
No, I was here about like 17 years ago. It's changed a lot. Downtown was under construction then. There were just cranes everywhere, and now downtown is done. So visually it's changed a lot. I don't know to what extent the after effects of the Israeli bombing are still being felt by people. I talked to a guy who lives a little less than a mile from where Israel bombed. He didn't seem enthusiastic about it. I said, could you hear it? And he said he could literally feel it. Which kind of leads to what we're going to talk about, we should introduce ourselves. I'm Robert Wright. This is the Non-Zero Podcast. You're Nikita, member of the Non-Zero team. You're in Spain, but actually you just did some traveling yourself. Is that true?
I just spent a weekend in Portugal, my first time there. It seemed like a beautiful country.
Uh-huh.
A lot of Russians everywhere you go in Europe, Russians and Russian speakers. And I guess all kinds of immigrants and tourists generally. A lot of Russian speech that I didn't used to hear when I traveled years ago.
Russian speech that you didn't used to hear? You mean you didn't run into Russians in Europe until after the Ukraine war started?
Right. You wouldn't so often hear it. And I don't know how many of those are Russians and how many of those are Russian speaking Ukrainians.
Mm-hmm.
And what exactly the dynamics of it all is, because some of them seem like tourists, even though there are various measures trying to decrease the amount of Russian traveling through Europe. But you just walk through the city and you hear a lot of Russian in around you.
Yeah. Yeah. On this, our topic of the day, are things falling apart? I mean, the way this occurred to me, I found that when I mentioned it to you, it kind of immediately resonated with you. And I think it resonates with people generally, are things falling apart? But it arrived in my brain kind of an oblique way. So we were at the JFK terminal, and the guy said he'd never been to Qatar, but he had heard that one thing to do was go to this. It turns out it's called the Falcon Souk, kind of in English. So souk is a market, Middle Eastern market, and the old souk in Doha includes a section where people buy falcons. Falconry is a big thing in this part of the world. One guy here compared it to, he said, like in America, men have golf here, they have falcons. Like they actually engage in competitions. They buy falcons, perhaps in the Falcon Souk where you can buy, I mean, you go into a shop and there's like rows of falcons sitting on, perches and, people buy them. And I guess the competition consists of, seeing which one brings back a mouse first, a real mouse. And so it's a little like fox hunting to the British, except that you don't have to go along for the hunt. You just dispatch a falcon. Anyway.
Is it a particular class of people that engages in that?
I got the impression from this analogy that it's kind of upper class. I mean, you know, it's a luxury. I mean, but anyway, that it's a term A falconer is a term I've so rarely used that this immediately brought to mind the William Butler Yeats poem, The Second Coming, which is about things falling apart. And turning and turning in the widening gyre is the first line. The second one is the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. There's so many famous lines from this poem, including that one. Things fall apart and the center cannot hold. The best lack all conviction while the worst are full of passionate intensity. That seems fairly characteristic of today. Maybe people have always felt that. I don't know. And then the end, what rough beast, it's our come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born. Another famous phrase, there was a Joan Didion had a collection called Slouching Toward Bethlehem. Upon doing a little research, I discovered, first of all, it was written in the aftermath of World War I, when things seemed to have fallen apart. And he had this idea that the Christian era was drawing to a close. And so that's the reason for all the Christian imagery and the very idea that kind of, it's funny. When I think of the Second Coming, I think of the idea that Christ is going to return to the world. And I assumed that the phrase existed and had that meaning before this poem. But it turns out when you read the poem, Second Coming refers to something other than Christ showing up to replace, to signify the dawn of an era that Yeats thought was going to be bad, I guess.
Before Christ returns, doesn't Antichrist appear? Wasn't that the idea?
Well, the Book of Revelation, I mean, according to the Book of Revelation, the apocalypse is going to feature all of this kind of stuff, including the appearance of the Antichrist, who has gotten some press lately, of course, because Peter Thiel has been talking about the Antichrist. Peter Thiel equates the Antichrist with, people who favor world government. And Peter Thiel thinks that a lot of people have views whose natural culmination is authoritarian, totalitarian world government. Like people who like regulation, for example, the inexorable climax of that kind of logic is the Antichrist, which is to say totalitarian world government. Obviously in America, there's a sense that, with Trump and everything, things are kind of getting chaotic and scary, at least if you're not a Trump supporter. In the world, you could make that case. Qatar having just gotten bombed by a country that, like the U.S., seems to show little regard for the international rules prohibiting attacking other nations without good cause. But you had a whole bunch of other things you brought up, kind of, right?
Well, yeah, but I'm like, this is an interesting question. Are things falling apart? And I certainly feel like they are, but it depends on the day and it depends on how much conscious effort I exert to get myself out of that feeling. And I go back and forth on like how subjective versus objective that is. I mean, for me, it psychologically, what kind of crystallized in my mind is COVID was a really weird time and nothing was the same after that, because there was this thing that nobody expected. Suddenly you live in a new reality. Mm-hmm. Nobody agrees on exactly what that reality is. I mean, there are actual like physical changes where you can't travel, the borders are closed,
one thing. The other part of the context of Yeats writing that poem was an extremely deadly flu epidemic that almost killed his wife. Mm-hmm. It was in the middle of that too, but anyway, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, so that time I remember as, yeah, there's like you suddenly wake up in a whole different reality. That reality, depending on your social circle, your kind of temperament, where you are, is described very differently. I mean, in America, I haven't been in America since before COVID, but from the media, I hear it's like it was very politicized and divisive and tribal coded.
Mm-hmm.
There's the one political tribe wearing four masks on their face, and the other political tribe is thinking that the government is taking over and becoming totalitarian. They need their guns to protect from it. In Russia, they kind of went back and forth. Like 1 week, everything's closed, then they open it up. Even while things are closed, some big patriotic event is happening. There's like a stadium event with thousands of people, and that's fine. But mm-hmm. you can't gather more than a certain amount of people in the streets, and all the bars are closed. I remember the first moment, like when it was just starting to be scary and people started buying into it. My wife at the time, girlfriend, and I were going, driving in the car to a store to like stockpile some food because that was a thing. People didn't know if there's going to be food soon. And we went to the store to buy things. And I remember the drive. And at the time, Russia hadn't yet closed the borders while Europe was already closing up.
Mm-hmm.
And we had this conversation where I felt almost like this weird kind of metaphysical suspicion of something being wrong, because just recently, me and her and like our social circle were on the same page about one of the major threats generally in our life politically is some kind of a return of a Soviet-style government with an Iron Curtain. Like that was a recent past. And you know that that's a possibility. And that's something that you worry about. And then in a minute, the world has changed. And now you are supposed to be angry at your government for not closing the border soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is this mysterious new disease you'd never heard of. And it was just felt weird. And it continued to be weird throughout the whole pandemic. And then if you do travel, like I went to Abkhazia one time, which is this like unrecognized state, quasi-state, breakaway republic from Georgia. We went there, it seemed like nobody is wearing a mask. There's no mention of COVID. There's like the order is just completely different. And even in Russia, you go from one place to another, and it's just like this fluid change of what the rules are. And then that era ended with the beginning of the war in Ukraine, where suddenly it just became all news. Like it was this thing that everybody is worried about, and then suddenly it's just not on the radar at all, and nobody thinks about it. Because there's the war. And so for me, then, of course, the war means also immigration, and immigration means finding yourself in a new environment. And that environment has its own things falling apart kind of flavor, because I was in Armenia that lost its disputed territory while I was there. And so it's been going like this since then. But I never can quite decide whether it's just I happen to be in a place and in a time where things feel like they're falling apart, or we're just all constantly online where things falling apart is something that gets your engagement and attention, or things actually are falling apart. I mean, do you have a line? Like when did feel start like they started falling apart?
I mean, I don't know. It's funny. And it's, you know, to some extent, maybe a temperamental thing. I mean, by temperamental, I mean, I'm referring to the extent to which a person gets concerned when things aren't orderly. Yeats is said to have had some mm-hmm. sympathy for fascism. I mean, I think as a matter of fact, he had it in parts of his life. And, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of ironic. That, you know, he's at the end of World War One. He's like, what's the next horrible thing going to be? And he's concerned that it's going to be disorder. Well, I mean, at least that's what symbolizes it. And as it happens, the movements that cause the horror are all about order. I mean, you know, fascism, Nazism, that kind of authoritarianism maybe was, you know, reacting to disorder. And that's one problem with disorder is the way it invites authoritarianism to fill the vacuum. But I do think, you know, I don't trust my own judgment of these things because I don't know, I'm just kind of like a negative person. You know, it's like, yeah, are things fall? You ask me if things are falling apart and I'm like, well, that's bad, right? Well, then probably so. Yeah, because that's bad and bad and things are bad. You know, it's weird. I kind of came of age, entered adolescence amid the turmoil of the late 60s and was in fact in San Francisco, the epicenter of it in the U.S. kind of when I was 12, 13 years old. And so I don't know, you would think that would kind of have inured me to it. For whatever reason, this seems a lot worse than that did to me, at least at the time. I mean, where the U.S. is, the degree of polarization, nature of the polarization, and so on. But it isn't just that. And different people talk about different things when you ask them if things are falling apart. I mean, there is the whole international thing with Trump really almost making a point of establishing that the rules just don't apply. There are no rules. You know, the U.S. doesn't acknowledge rules, kind of, and you could argue that past presidents didn't really respect him. They just pretended they did. But in any event, he's very overt about it. As I said, you know, Israel has been with America's active support and help has been disregarding international law in a big way. And that is very present in the country I happen to be in. But, you know, as you told me via email, there are whole other categories of things aside from societal, you know, I mean, the question of like what's real, you know, deep fakes introducing doubts about whether we can even be certain about what's real. I don't know. I guess I'd like to. I wish we could take an instantaneous poll right now and find out whether all of this sounds crazy or whether there is this sense that, you know, things are falling apart.
And the falling apart bit assumes that things were put together at some point. And that really right. depends on, you know, where you are, I grew up, I was born in 1988. That's 3 years before the Soviet Union collapsed. Mm-hmm. My starting point was things are not together. You know, they fell apart right when I was like just starting to form memories.
Yeah.
So it's really local. And like if you listen to Americans in the 90s, the way they invoke now is like this beautiful time where, you know, it's just the Friends were on TV or something. It's pop music and good movies and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it was a time of relative calm. I mean, for us, you know, the end of the Cold War was good news, and the Cold War it had a certain kind of tension, although in retrospect, a certain kind of stability compared to certain parts of the post-Cold War era. But yeah, it didn't. The 90s weren't like that. With you, I don't know. Things are changing so fast that, I mean, you were saying that there's a, I don't know if you use the term withdrawal, but that in Russia, at least, people are kind of making a point to almost pay less attention to the world or certain parts of the world because, they're so disturbing.
I use the term inner immigration, which I think probably originates maybe even in Germany, in Nazi Germany, but I was aware of it growing up because it was a theme in like late Soviet Union, which mm-hmm. was not so much about things really falling apart in this drastic way. It was more about things being so stale and fake and you know, that there's the official reality that you were supposed to kind of go along with, that people were losing faith in, and inner migration referred to just giving up on that bigger reality around you and focusing on something, you know, your gardening, or you pick up some obscure language to learn, or you're studying some esoteric books, you retreat into your own little world. Some people were trying to emigrate and some people were able to, but a lot couldn't, and they retreated into their little communities or their own private life. And now it's a thing where, yeah, the war starts and everybody's for a year, for 2 years, everybody's freaked out, everybody's reading every news update there is, and at some point you kind of burn out. I mentioned that anecdote at one point. A friend of mine whose family is from Rostov, when Prigozhin was in Rostov, tanks are in the city, his reaction was like, when something happens, let me know. Like, this is not, I'm tired of following this soap opera. And so if something happens, let me know. But for now, you know, I'm disregarding all of this. And to me, it sounded crazy. But then in 3 days, it was over. And you know, he was not wrong to, like, wait for an official, you know, a change of power or civil war to start. It didn't. And he moved on, and we all moved on. Yeah. So there's this weird back and forth between being really freaked out about whatever new thing that's happening to just accepting that this is the kind of shit that happens these days.
Yeah.
You mentioned the guy who was a mile away from the strike in Qatar.
Mm-hmm.
I had this weird conversation some months ago with my mom on the phone. She's in Russia, in my hometown. And, like, sandwiched between, you know, how's your health and how's the garden at the dacha, there were drone strikes, and there was a particular day when they were massive enough that most of the city heard them, and so the next day people talked about it. So I'm on the phone with her and ask about the drone attack. And she's like, yeah, you know, everybody's asking me about it. It was during the night. And she's like, you know, I heard a bunch of explosions, but, you know, it's always been like this for me. Loud noises don't really disrupt my sleep. Like, I woke up, I heard the noises, I went back to sleep. What really wakes me up is somebody whispers or looks at me while I'm sleeping. And then she just, like, she said this, and then moved on to whatever else is happening in her daily life.
That's kind of funny. I mean, just by...
Go ahead.
I'm just saying, you just kind of note this as, like, this is a new reality now. And there are a lot of small things like that. You know, flights are disrupted because of drones. And you hear about it from this mundane kind of part of life where, like, a friend is going from one city to another and go, these goddamn drones, I have to take a train because the flight is delayed and I do need to be in the city next day.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes a part of the norm.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you know, you mentioned gardens twice. The first time, you know, you mentioned gardening as something people do as a kind of a form of distraction from the world's troubles. The phrase tend your garden is famous in association with Voltaire's Candide, which was itself written partly in response to a bunch of catastrophes. I don't think it was kind of warning like the Second Coming, but it was in response to people, to philosophers, a particular philosopher who was saying, don't worry, this is the best of all possible worlds in some sense. But it's funny, I think that was meant seriously as the prescription for all the world's sorrows and all the world's chaos and tragedy is the most you can do. And I don't know how metaphorically it was meant. I mean, I've always taken tend your garden to be a metaphor, like try to make, you know, think globally, act locally, kind of like just try to make your world better, like not so much literal gardening. But I don't honestly, like, I guess if I really want to know what the answer to that is, I should either read Candide or read more about Voltaire. But that is one prescription. There's a related thing I heard last night, and I've kind of heard this, that younger people are turning away from social media because they're aware. He was talking about people 12, 13, 14. First of all, they're aware of how horrible it is. I might add, at the same time, social media is becoming less like classic social media for, you know, reasons I could get into. But he said the closest they come is kind of group, you know, chat, like text, you know, Signal or whatever they're using. So I don't know if that's the same. I don't know if that's so much a kind of belated reaction to our understanding of how toxic social media can be, or something, or a broader reaction to a world that seems increasingly concerning, or what?
Yeah, in my generation, I see a lot of people trying with various degree of success to decrease the amount of social media and just the phone time generally.
Yeah.
There was there's a month in April this year, here in Spain and Portugal, where all power went out. And it's like electricity went out, phone network coverage was not there, and the internet was not there. And so my wife and I were at our apartment trying to do work, and now you can't do work because there's no internet. And you look outside the window trying to assess whether it's your apartment or the building, or maybe part of the building. Uh-huh. And then you leave the apartment. Okay, it's the building as well. Then you leave the building. Well, it's the street as well. And you just have to walk around to try to figure out what's happening. So we walked around. Nobody knows what's happening, but there's no electricity anywhere. And there was this time of a few hours, maybe it took two or three hours for us to find Wi-Fi at one cafe. So then we could get the update and at least knew the scale of the thing. But there were a few hours of really not knowing at all what's happening. Mm-hmm. Like, it may be a few streets, it may be the city, it may be the country, maybe the continent. It turned out to be like the peninsula, basically, Spain and Portugal. Maybe some other country was a little harmed with this as well. And it lasted for a day. But those few hours was a really strange kind of paradoxical unity of these emotions. It may be that everything's fallen apart, like we lived through COVID, then this war that led us to immigrate. And maybe it's the third thing. Maybe it's the new next major crisis and there's just not going to be power for months. Who knows? We were like one-upping each other with scenarios, possible scenarios that like over the top and to kind of trying to make each other laugh. And both realized that even as we are trying to come up with like a really over the top thing, none of it would be surprising. Like if we did find the internet and it was like, you know, Russia attacks Europe with a cyber attack and there's no electricity anywhere within the EU. And that's the new reality. There's a new chapter of this is how the Third World War starts. It wouldn't be unbelievable. It would be like, oh, well, I guess this is this now. This is a new chapter. And at the same time, we're in Spain and people are chill in Spain. So everybody's just walking around like, hey, let's find a place where we can get some beer if there is some place where the beer is still cold because it was not enough time for it to warm up. Let's go and try that. And so we just lived a day of not being able to work. And so you just walk around and you have a beer and you sit on a beach. It was a very nice day.
Yeah, you don't read much about Spain in the news. And I guess that's good news for Spain. hearing about places where bad things are happening. So is your mother, are the drone strikes a recurring thing? I mean, does she hear, like, most weeks, does she hear a strike?
No, it was, I mean, she lives basically right outside of Moscow, and I take it that they're pretty good at shooting those down.
Mm-hmm.
So it occasionally there is one, like, from my hometown. I haven't heard of a new one in a while, but even the ones that made sort of national news were just not huge. Like the mm-hmm. worst I saw, you know, somebody's apartment got, you know, the window is smashed, and there's like some injuries that people got, but nothing major. But drones generally are a reality in mainland Russia now, mostly with like flight disruptions, like mm-hmm. airports close. In Moscow and St. Petersburg, they close every once in a while, and it's just something to be on the lookout. And then there are, you know, the closer you are to the front, there are airports that are closed completely.
Yeah.
Cell phone coverage as well, because I get it that, you know, signal, like navigating the drones somehow get connected to the cellular network.
So you mean they sure. shut down coverage when there is a drone? Like, what do you mean by the...
There's just recently I heard that, I think in the city of Ulyanovsk, they just said that until the war is over, there's not going to be cellular internet. Yeah. In other parts, it's like, it's just spotty. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't know how widespread this is and how, you know, maybe it was like a period of time, maybe it's still like this, but somebody was telling me about the problems that the taxi drivers are having. Like, you know, you order a taxi, the taxis where you used to call people on the phone and saying the address, that's long in the past. So it's all in the app now. So people do order the taxi and put in where they are, but the taxi driver doesn't have internet. And so they can't, like, they don't see where the person is. So they need to, like, park next to some cafe, catch their Wi-Fi, check where they're supposed to go. There's like, and it's just like things like that are kind of sprinkled around normal life now, where, you know, this thing is not working, or that the latest thing is apparently now if you have traveled abroad, you come back to Russia, then your phone coverage is going to be disabled for a day until you like click on some link in that will be sent to you from the operator, so the cell phone operator in a text or something like that.
Right. It sounds like Ukraine is to some extent succeeding. I mean, its hope, I think, is that by hitting Russia and disrupt, I mean, part of it is strategic in a straightforward sense. They like to blow up like oil depots and refineries and things. But I think they also want more and more Russian people to say, you know, this is getting kind of to be a drag. Like, this is, if nothing else, a major inconvenience. Could we wind this thing up? And by the way, I have a prediction, kind of. I read about a week ago that Russia is closing in on what will be its biggest victory since Bakhmut. I mean, I guess you can call that a victory. Really? They destroyed the whole place, but they did wind up in possession of it. It's another town that's like that big, and they expect it to fall within weeks. I'm guessing Ukraine has already, that the people in the, you know, the intelligence division or whoever does these things are already cooking up something that will help distract from this loss and also can be cast as a kind of retaliation or something. I'm guessing, you know, who knows? But every once in a while, they do something spectacular in Russia, like the time they launched the drones from within Russia and hit all those. That was when they hit the planes, the military planes, I think, like very expensive and important strategic bombers, I guess.
Yeah, and the oil refineries have been a target recently, and that did lead to shortages of fuel.
Mm-hmm.
in some parts. So yeah, they have some success for sure.
And I should add, by the way, in terms of things falling apart, that of course the invasion of Ukraine was another case, and I think people in Europe feel this more than I do, where rules that it seemed to hold for a long time didn't. Now, Russia would say, I'm pretty sure Putin would say, well, the U.S., with Iraq and earlier with Kosovo and so on, had broken the rules. And but whatever, the invading Ukraine is certainly an example of a violation of international law. And the funny thing about, the Cold War is there wasn't really that much of that kind of stuff. There were a lot of covert ops. There were a lot of support for insurgencies. There were a lot of support for proxy fighters. But you didn't see a lot of trans-border aggression.
You can also, one way of seeing the Ukraine war and a bunch of other, basically, take any conflict on the post-Soviet territory, and you can see it as the continuation of the falling apart of the Soviet Union. I mean, Armenian, Azerbaijan, or Georgian, Abkhazia, Russian, Ukraine, these were all parts of the same country, and there was a unified army that could have take control of some national conflict within the bounds of this one state. State fell apart, there are territories to fight over.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and Ukraine itself, the roots of that lie in the breakup of the Soviet Union, of course. And of course, one source of recent chaos is the government shutdown in the U.S. We should probably say a little something about that at some point. But also at some point, we're probably going to go into overtime. Are there things you wanted to say about Non-Zero or anything you're doing there? Also, you did just go to Portugal. And I think, if you don't come back with a little photo exhibit, we'll all be disappointed. My father he would do these slideshows when he took pictures, like when he was stationed in Korea, he took pictures, but they would always be slides and not pictures. And it was like a family event set up to project.
You mean you have a projector and you put the little film, square of the film?
The little square of the film. And we didn't even have a carousel back in those days. He would just, he would replace the slide each time laboriously for each new picture.
I had somewhere in Russia, they're still there, a collection of these slides from my parents. They're both geophysicists, so they traveled the big Soviet country doing research in all these remote places, and there was these stunning pictures of various,
Okay. So if you're listening on audio, this is Portugal that is being seen by people who are not listening on audio. You can hear the accompanying music.
My first time there, beautiful country. It seemed beautiful. I saw Lisbon and a little bit of the ocean. I heard a lot of Russian speech. I don't know if I mentioned. And just general, I mean, for me, living in Russia and now finding myself in all of these different places, traveling from one place to another, is an education. And that too is, it's kind of hard to know whether you're seeing a place in total flux or you're just seeing Europe, because I hadn't traveled a whole lot throughout it. But there's a lot of immigration. We talked to an Indian taxi driver, asking, what are you doing in Portugal? How you ended up there? And he's like, I think it's all a circle. Everybody's moving to a new place. Americans are coming to Europe. I came from India to here. Germans are moving to Spain, and Spaniards are moving someplace else. Spain, I recently learned, just in the last 25 years, they added 10 million in immigration, which, the country was just 40 million to begin with. So it's 25% increase of population through immigration, but it is not as big of a tension point as in many places, because most of these people are Spanish speaking, you know, from mm-hmm. colonies.
Yeah.
And so you just like walk around learning about, like, I was supposed to learn geography in school, but I skipped a lot of classes. And so I'm learning it through war and migration.
Yeah. By the way, Lisbon is part of the context of Candide's Voltaire. I mean, there had been these several big prominent tragedies, and I don't know if he explicitly alludes to them, but this is always mentioned in connection with that, is an earthquake in Lisbon that killed tens of thousands of people. And it was one of the things that made him outraged, that I guess it was Leibniz who the philosopher, who in ways I have complete incomprehension of, whose like theory of monads, I guess was related to his idea that things are really fine. I don't know. I don't listen to anything I say about that. But anyway, the Lisbon earthquake is part of the backdrop for sure. Did I guess you didn't pick up any earthquake vibes there? They're over that in Lisbon.
No, I didn't learn enough. I learned like the earthquakes that I did see mentioned were from an older time.
Well, this was, yeah, I mean, this is pretty old. This is the 18th century. But it was big.
So you mentioned Nanzir and the housekeeping. I should mention, we are having our first inaugural reading club this Saturday,
mm-hmm.
Led by our own Danny Fessner and, community member, somebody who volunteered on Discord. I think his name is Charles. And we'll be discussing chapter 5 of a very short book called, what is it called? God and Golem Inc.
Yeah, it's by Norbert Wiener, who was he came up with the term cybernetics,
mm-hmm.
Which was about information processing systems with particular emphasis on the way feedback, positive and negative feedback, can keep them under control or lead them to run out of, to go out of whack or whatever if you get into a positive feedback cycle sometimes. He also, I think, so the person credited with information theory is Claude Shannon, but Wiener, simultaneously and independently, I think, did some things that Shannon did. I forget exactly, but Shannon defined the bit. And he also kind of defined, this also involves the definition of entropy as being, there's an information theoretic way to define entropy. Anyway, Norbert Wiener was very much on that part of that. And very big thinker. He was, I think, a lefty and was probably, I haven't read this particular chapter or anything else from this book, but I think he was somebody who's concerned about the consequence of technology. I mean, it's a fascinating question what he envisions, because it's about AI, right? I mean, it's about intelligent, a future with intelligent machines, I gather. This reading that is going to be under discussion.
Yeah, I haven't read it myself yet, but I'm going to, and I'll be at a gathering on Zoom, a link to which we'll put in the video description on YouTube and in show notes for this podcast.
And it's also Friday's Earthling, the non-zero newsletter for Friday. It's called The Earthling, and it will be in this Friday's as well, will... I'm trying to get my time straight. Like it's earlier there. So, there's plenty of time to post this on Thursday. And then, so the newsletter that comes out the day after will also be a link.
Yeah. But the pitch for it is apparently he, like all of the essential threads of doomerism, of concern about AI, he apparently and them down as early as 66, I think, was when it was published.
Huh. Yeah.
Published in 66, but it was a third in a series of books that had the same warnings about the control problem in artificial intelligence starting in 1948. So I'm curious, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take a look. So yeah, and then I guess this we could do in overtime. We were, you had said you were curious about the shutdown. Like, it doesn't seem like a rational thing to somebody who's not in America to keep shutting the government down. Like, some people think government should not be shut down and they should actually function. Well, to each his own. We do it our way. But there was a sense of growing chaos, which is, and we can, you know, I mean, the airports were starting to get discombobulated, and food benefits were on the verge of maybe disappearing for low-income people. Anything else we should talk about before going into overtime, which is available to paid subscribers in the Non-Zero newsletter? We didn't get into that heavily into the question. I mean, let me say, I do think the sense of things getting out of control is probably going to grow over the next few years, just because I do think AI is going to be a very disruptive technology, even if things wind up working out well or not too badly or whatever. And there will be ultimately many benefits from AI. I still think the sheer disruption on various dimensions is going to freak a lot of people out.
An item in the latest Earthling with these AI generated videos of, you know, people that don't exist abusing their food stamps benefits, I guess, saying that they sell it for money, or a woman saying, you know, she has a shopping cart full of groceries and the card is not coming through because, I guess, you know, this was tied to the shutdown, right? The SNAP benefits were supposed to run out. And it's all fake. But a lot of people, if you look at the comments, a lot of people are outraged. And then there's this secondary layer to things where, even after realizing this is fake, some people are saying, okay, well, this particular video is not real, but what it highlights is a real dynamic. These people exist. And so that leads us into a weird territory, I think, where it used to be that you can, you know, you do your research, as in, like, you find the video proof or the photo proof of something happening. Well, that might be all out of the window with this technology getting so good that it's going to be very hard to figure out whether something you're watching is real or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this dynamic of, I don't know if this particular thing I'm watching is real, but it feels real to me. It feels like it, you know, it fits in what I am worried about or what I'm angry about or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know where that leads.
Yeah, and Fox News actually reported this as if it were true. I don't think they did it on TV, yeah. But the website featured an actual, you know, we have the screenshot in last Friday's newsletter of this story before they retracted it, but they just took the quotes from these deep fakes, and they were just, I mean, first of all, it was like all black people, as far as I could tell. It was like your stereotypical welfare recipient. I mean, you know, the truth is that like 25% of the people in America who receive these food benefits, which used to be called food stamps, are black. But all the people in these deep fakes pretty much were black. And they were saying the kinds of things that they would stereotypically say, according to critics of this program. Like, one of them said something like, "The taxpayers have a responsibility to feed my kid and take care of my kid." And I think that one was quoted in the Fox News. Now I assume we're going to develop, well, you would hope we would develop some kind of immune system, whether it's people just getting more and more skeptical of all this stuff and paying less attention, or some sort of verifying but thing. I don't know. I was just talking to somebody who's in this uses these AI generated videos legitimately in the course of his work and said, you can actually take the watermarks off. They don't now have some technology of validation that's foolproof. I don't know if that's true, but you know, even if skepticism will grow, but if there's a residual subset of people who take these seriously, they're going to be, you know, vulnerable to exactly the kind of propaganda that these things were. And yeah, I think this is one of many reasons I think things are going to get weird. And cultivate your garden, I guess. Anything else before I was going to do one of these things where I explain American politics to you to the extent that I understand it myself. But I do think the politics of this are interesting. They will continue to play out.
Let's give me an explainer, because so far people who were explaining this to me still made these caveats like, I don't understand this myself, but here's what. I've got a bunch of these clips. I wonder if I should play some. I've got, maybe in the overtime, I'll play you some AI 50 Cent, and there's a Trump connection there. And maybe before we go to overtime, I can just put this one real short for you to laugh. This is the state of robotics in Russia.
In Russia?
This is the first Russian humanoid robot from today, I think. Apparently got confused by the lights and started stumbling and then finally fell down. Presentation day.
That's the best product demo since Elon Musk demonstrated the incredible strength of these windows of the Cybertruck by throwing, you know, like a kind of iron baseball at them, and they shattered. And he said, well, let's do it again. And he threw another one and shattered. Or actually, he didn't do the throwing. He had a thrower. And the guy was like, you know, on the second one, the guy was like throwing it as softly as you can throw it. So get it there, you know, and like, sorry, window breaks. That was wonderful. But no, the robot may surpass. People, you have to see it. This is the way the robot stumbles. Oh well. Also, I'm kind of surprised. Maybe I shouldn't be. You tell me. Should I be surprised that they used the quintessentially American song that was from Rocky? And of course, in some of the Rocky sequels, Rocky would beat the shit out of a Russian, didn't he? Apollo. Well, who was the Russian? Boxer.
Ivan Drago.
No, it wasn't the Apollo guy. It was somebody else. What's that?
Ivan Drago, I think, was his name.
Ah.
Rocky IV, I think.
You know more than I. Okay. So should we go into overtime?
Let's go into overtime.
Okay. So if anybody wants to join us, it's easy if you're already a paid subscriber, Non-Zero, and it's easy to become one of those. Link in the show notes. And hope to see you there.